Welcome, everybody, to episode 138 of the You Can't Comp This NBA podcast. To our listeners and all of our podcast platforms and our friends at Central Coast Radio, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on what part of the world that you are in, or if you're catching the late night replay, thank you so much for listening. If you are wanting to listen to us on Central Coast Radio, we are on at 10 a.m. to noon Australian time. And a big, big hello to Adam, who's taking some well-deserved R&R this week. Hope you're doing better, mate, and hope your family is getting better too. So this week, we have a very, very special guest coming on board, and it is Ryan from Gemrate, and he is live from Brooklyn. Ryan, how are you today, boss?
Doing well. Thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure. I love the last one in person. You know, this is nice still to connect, but you know, I'm looking forward to the next time you're out here.
Yeah, look, I was actually just thinking to myself, looking at your surroundings, I remember being in your office last time. I'm feeling a little bit Brooklyn homesick is the appropriate way to say. So actually the last time we spoke, I was in Brooklyn and I was with you and that was fantastic. So thank you for hosting me. You were a fantastic host. And I've actually talked my wife into the future of living in Brooklyn for 1 month a year. So I cannot wait to get back there, man. I love that city. It's awesome.
I look forward to that.
Hey, really quickly, why does no one go to the basketball in Brooklyn, but New York is just the mecca? That I cannot unpack in my head. It's literally 10 train stops away, and it's night and day when it comes to the culture of the two teams.
Just doesn't have sort of the following. I mean, the Brooklyn team is the Jersey team, and it just never really it hasn't really translated. And so it's just, you know, and it's a beautiful arena, and it's a good location. You know,
the location is really good. Yeah,
You know, we went to the game, and it's obviously like a complete difference of getting tickets to that game versus trying to get tickets to the Knicks game. It's just a completely different following. It's wild, but I mean, it's nice. It's much easier when the Cavs are in town to go watch them play in Brooklyn than it is to try to. I don't remember if I've ever shared it with you, but the only time I tried to go to a Knicks game versus the Cavs, I got, you know, scammed. I bought a fake ticket, and it was like not cheap either. So I'm a little more cautious about going to Knicks games in general too, for whatever reason. It's just it's a different environment over there.
Yeah, right. I use StubHub just because I can't be bothered dealing with all the scalpers and stuff like that. It's just too much for me. Yeah. Hey, actually, interesting about Knicks fans. We went to Washington at the tail end of our holiday, and Washington is not a popular team to go and see, right? So
right.
The play that I was doing was buying last minute tickets because people dump tickets right before tip off. Anything that hasn't been sold pretty much gets discounted up to 75%. Like, it's a really big discount. I was sitting there, I was actually in the taxi trying to buy my ticket, and there was just nothing, and they're all just actually disappearing in front of my eyes. So in the end, I just sort of panic bought, and I bought something literally the second to third last back row, right at the very top. When I got there, the whole thing was sold out with Knicks fans. There was about 70% of the place was Knicks fans. Wow. And by the end of it, because it was the Wizards and Jordan Poole was doing Jordan Poole things, all the Wizards fans had left, and it was just Knicks fans left just having like the time of their life there. So it was a really weird scenario.
Are you still on the Koulibaly bandwagon at all? I know you were kind of keeping an eye on them because we saw the Wizards when you were in Brooklyn.
I'm not going to lie to you. I haven't been watching every single Wizards game. Like, they're like, for me, they're a pretty tough watch this year, to be honest. And I'm still spewing about that Rui Hachimura trade. You can't tell me that Hachimura would be perfect for that team right now. Young, big body to, you know, play some deep. That's just me. Crazy thought. Look, I think it's pretty obvious when you watch that team, Deni Avdija is actually playing hard, trying to do the right thing out there. And then what is Koulibaly doing wrong? Why isn't he getting, you know, a bit more time? In saying that, Jordan Poole's actually coming off the bench now. So I think they've had enough of the, you know, the Jordan Poole experiment. The funny thing about that, though, is he's going to be stuck on that team, man. Who's going to want to take that contract?
That's wild. The Jordan Poole story is crazy. I mean, it shows you, though, I think about this all the time, just like the alternate universes of like players who land in scenarios that are just unfortunate and like, or amazing for them, you know? And it's just like Jordan Poole landed in a spot where he got to learn from the best for, you know, a few years and was in a great system where he flourished and, you know, basically helped the team secure a championship, which is amazing. And then throw him in his own where he's got to, you know, have a different sort of role. And it's just a complete flop. All the good things he learned and sort of were all the guardrails that were in place sort of, you know, are no longer there. And it's just a completely different player. And it's just many people in the NBA, you know, and especially in a sport where you get drafted and you're sort of with the team for 7 years, a lot of times because of the money. And it's just like, you know, it's just like, who knows? Maybe Cade's a completely different player in a different system.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, or like, you know, the Wiseman story is like, Wiseman's the opposite example of like a system that was so good, but not catering at all to where he was in his career, or like, you know, even Kuminga. Anyways, it's just wild to think about like how much random chance plays in sort of like your potential.
So I think the Wiseman and the Poole thing is, it's the same thing. It's an opportunity league. The Jordan Poole thing is the perfect opportunity for him. And then the Wiseman thing is they couldn't have put that guy into a worse situation. Like, that guy needs right. pick and rolls. He needs post-ups. They never run those sets in Golden State.
Right.
And
right.
defensively, he had no idea what he was doing. So there's no way Kerr was going to play him. Like, that never made sense. The funny one there is LaMelo Ball. They could have drafted him instead of Wiseman.
Right.
And how
right.
sick would right. have that been to... And they could have rolled them out at the same time. Clay, Steph, and mm-hmm, LaMelo. Mm-hmm. That would have been really cool. But I think just one more thing on this before we move on. I've been saying for so long now that Steph Curry is one of the leaders of our generation. And it's not going to get any traction. He's a very quiet guy. But you think about the leadership that he's actually provided almost to the league. I would make that argument. And I think Jordan Poole, in some ways, is going to be his legacy, because you can see the difference between the two teams and what the outcomes are. And mm-hmm. for me, like the thing in the middle of that graph is Steph Curry. Like, and same right. as Draymond. Can you imagine if Draymond didn't have a sensible, hard-headed, wise person like Steph Curry around to keep him under control? Like, he'd probably be out of the league by now.
Right. No, you're completely right.
Let's get down to basketball cards. We've segued enough already, haven't we, man?
So, all right, it's all relevant.
I'll let you introduce yourself and just tell us about your company in case there are some listeners that haven't heard. This is your third time on the show, actually. So,
Yeah. And, so very briefly, Gemrate, we've been around for almost 3.5 years now. We're best known for sort of like the weekly and mostly the monthly reporting that we do. That's sort of the stuff that gets sort of shared the most throughout the hobby, which is we're just sort of synthesizing sort of the big picture trends in the hobby from the grading companies. And so how many cards are PSA, you know, SGC, Beckett at CGC, how many cards are they grading each month? And how does that break down? Where's there sort of momentum within that space? You know, where are companies sort of losing momentum? That's kind of what we're best known for. And then behind the scenes, we do a lot of data work, which we're just starting to start really window more aggressively to the hobby, which is around like actually sort of taking the pop reports that are in place, but sort of just repackaging them in a way that, you know, they're more user-friendly. Like, I think everybody's aware, like, pop reports have sort of not really been getting a ton of investment from the grading companies themselves. They're good enough most of the times, but you got to struggle through them. We're just trying to make it a lot more user-friendly. And so we've recently rolled out some new features, which we can talk about. Yeah, that's kind of what we're best known for, is just like all the data related to grading. We're just trying to help people understand it and, you know, make better use of it.
Yeah, definitely. And so you do have a slight data point to celebrate recently. You just got to 1 million cards in your database. So why don't you tell people why that's important and why it's worth celebrating?
Yeah, it's funny. Somebody who I talked to, who's not in the hobby, but I was trying to explain to her, like, yeah, we hit 1 million card threshold, which like basically doesn't mean much unless you're in this hobby. And even then, it really doesn't mean much. But the 1 million cards is basically how many cards we've gone through the process of unifying across the grading companies. So when you come to Gemrate.com and we have a new search feature where you can just quickly look up and understand the population for any single card in the hobby, but there's 1 million, there's 1.1 million now at this stage, where we can give you back the company across all grading companies. I mean, across all the grading companies in one view. And so if you wanted to look up the 1980 top, you know, the 1980 Bird and Magic, we can give you back the data for all the grading companies. And that's a hard one because each of the grading companies listed completely different. Like if you were to go each one of their pop reports, they don't use the same conventions at all. Or if you wanted to come look at more modern stuff, ultra modern stuff, and you want to look at like 2023 Prism, you could come and look at the Wemby stuff and see, hey, how is this being, you know, who's grading this? Where are they grading it? What is the gem rate? Most important thing that people look at the data for today is understand like the nuance of like, how are these cards, how are they faring at the different grading companies, especially for like ultra modern stuff that's being graded at high volume. So that's like that 1 million cards is sort of the support and the infrastructure for us being able to provide that data to the hobby.
I think now is also a really good take a breath and also take a step back, because we've actually gained a couple of new listeners to the show, and I've had some messages from people saying, what is a comp? So why don't we just take a step back now and talk about mint and near mint? Because the question actually I've got for you is, because I was looking at through your tables the other day on the total pop reports, and it doesn't actually have PSA 10 at the top or BGS 10 at the top. It's got mint and near mint. So can you explain that to me, and can you explain that to the listeners, what actually what that means? Because, and I'm saying this from a very simplistic point of view, in my head it's easier just to look at the number and go 10. Everyone understands what 10 mean, but you have chosen not to do that. So maybe now's a really good time to sort of break that down a little bit. The Bang Man, our proud sponsor to the podcast. Thank you so much to Team Bang Man for your ongoing support. April Bronze Edition is out. It is absolutely loaded. Value galore here. The highlight of this month's Bronze Edition is 5 different rookie classes. That's right. You have the opportunity to hit top rookies out of 5 different rookie classes. And this is absolutely packed. Prism, Select, Mosaic, Optic, Flux, Hoops Premium, Donruss. Bronze packs are predominantly retail products, so Blasters, Megas, T-Mall is what you're looking at here. But in terms of a fun rip, you cannot go past this. $129 delivered. There is no room for a promo code on this because it's so jam-packed full of value. Contact Team Bangman on Facebook or Instagram and they will hook you up. Thank you, Team Bangman.
Yeah, I think so. The reason, I'll come back to why we do what we're doing, but yeah,
yeah,
I mean,
please.
So
yeah.
Not every company obviously has the same grading scale. Just as a quick background to this, you know, yeah. PSA is best known for the PSA 10, which is their gem mint. Yeah. You know, Beckett 5, 7, 10 years ago was sort of considered the leader in the hobby, and they opted for a 9.5 being their gem mint score. And so a lot of the companies that have emerged over the last, you know, 5 years sort of saw Beckett when they were sort of thinking about how do we want to go to market. Beckett seemed pretty differentiated. People liked the subgrades. And so there was a lot of momentum towards that. And so not everybody has the same scale and not everybody sort of has the same standards. And so, you know, in theory, a BGS 9.5, which is their gem mint, should compare roughly to a PSA 10 gem mint and a SGC 10 gem mint. CGC/CSG went to market with a 9.5, but because the market was changing, they quickly reacted and said, we're going to scrap this. We're going to go to a 10 as a gem mint scale as well. And so it's just, it's not uniform across the hobby. And so what we're trying to do with the Universal Pop Report is make that simple for people. And so instead of putting the grades up there, which do not, if you were to look at that chart and I said next to the gem mint grade, I had each one of the grading companies grades there, it would just start to cause a little bit of like confusion. And so we've just opted to say like to like, we're going to put all the gem mint scores in one column because we're going to take away the work of you having to sort of think about, okay, this is a BGS 9.5 and this is a PSA 10. We're just telling you, these are the highest graded cards and we're going to group them together. We're going to do the same for mint and so on.
Yeah, right. Actually, that makes a lot of sense. You've simplified it for us. And you said to take the thinking out of it for people. I feel like that's a real catchphrase at the moment for people, isn't it? People want you to make almost the decision for them. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm a big subscriber to, like, that's why part of why PSA has done really well is it's a very simple grading scale. I mean, yeah, obviously they were already the leader and there's a lot of trust and momentum there. But in general, when people were new to the hobby, it was an easy scale to follow. And so, you know, pricing was easy to follow. There's less debate. I think I've even talked about it on here before. The BGS grading scale just leads a lot of like a lot to debate around like subgrades and what that means and how you value cards. And it's simple. And so, you know, the simpler you can make this for people in general, I think like the easier it is for people to transact. And so it's kind of why we've just tried to present the data in a way that's pretty uniform. And we're sort of not trying to make people get too caught up in the weeds of the data itself.
So as you were speaking, I actually wrote down a note, 9.5 gem mint. And the reason I wrote that down is because I was going to ask you a question is that, do you think that actually led to the demise of BGS because they chose 9.5 as their gem mint instead of 10?
I don't know if it led to their demise, but it certainly didn't help their case when there was a lot of new people coming in the hobby and they were not communicating at all. I honestly think the hardest thing, which I kind of just alluded to briefly, but like the reality of it is I just think there, if you try to sell a BGS 9.5 with a min 9.5 versus a 9.5 plus, which is basically like a 9.5 with 2.10 subgrades.
Yeah.
That is a very hard conversation to have with people who sort of value subgrades differently or value a min 9.5 is less than like a PSA 10, right? And so that whole thing we just went through there, which we're in this hobby, right? Like we live and breathe this hobby quite a bit. And like that's complicated for us to discuss, you know, live, right? And for somebody new coming to the hobby to have to be like, oh, wait, I have to think about this context when I'm going to buy a BGS 9.5 or, oh, I now own a BGS 9.5. How should I price this? It creates a lot of friction in them being transacted, right? And so I think that has sort of complicated their story and they weren't communicating. Like, I always thought that BGS should have really revamped their pricing guide to be oriented around their subgrades to make it like super simple. So like, if you do own a BGS 9.5, what does it mean? Like, what's the difference of like certain subgrades and stuff like that? And they just didn't cater that. So anyways, I don't know if it was single-handedly their demise, but it certainly didn't help and help when the hobby was thriving, you know, around the start of the pandemic and into the pandemic. And so that's, I think their lack of communication, honestly, was their has been their demise over the last few years. But I do think like the 9.5 complicated a lot of the story.
I have no idea who's running their social media, honestly.
Well, they just yesterday introduced a new person, a new face of Beckett to the hobby. They released on social this gentleman by the name of Luke Miller, I believe, which is good. They need a front person. This is sort of their equivalent of like an SGC Pete to start to tell more of the Beckett story. Now, whether they'll deliver on that or not is, you know, very much TBD, but I think the hobby would love to see Beckett being, you know, increasingly more relevant and less sort of just.
It could be 8 years present. Too late. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
well, I mean, you know, honestly, but the difference between them and a company that, like, let's say, for example, this was HGA we were talking about. HGA doesn't have a legacy. Beckett, there are a lot of people who are like fanatical about that brand. And like, you know, they've definitely sort of fallen out of love with it over the last few years, but like, I don't think that people would be like resistant to the idea that Beckett all of a sudden has momentum. It's just they've got to get their, you know, crap together and sort of pull that off. But
yeah, definitely.
They've not said much. And when they have said stuff, they've not really delivered on it. And so, you know, it's partially sort of just windowing the hobby into like, here's where we want to go. Like, this is our vision. And then actually executing on it. So not getting, you know, too big picture or too aggressive with sort of what they're promising and sort of just start to put some messaging in the hobby and hitting those expectations.
I do agree with that too, but I think it's also about marketing too. I think that's, to me, where they've fallen short,
yeah.
I would say, on a number of examples. And I don't think that's the reason, the sole reason why your company would become unsuccessful, but it does seem to me that things change quite quickly in the hobby and they just couldn't keep up. Like, they didn't realize things were changing or they just couldn't get traction to keep up with the change that was happening, and then they literally got left behind. That's my very simplistic observation of the Beckett situation.
Yeah, to sort of like close on that thought, I mean, just they weren't really structured to sort of take advantage of it, and nor did they sort of react to take advantage of sort of like when the market was moving. They're just not a company that sort of, they've got a lot of agendas. I mean, if you go to the Beckett website, there's just a lot of people with sort of different stakes in the company, whether that's like the marketplace or the price guide or the grading, right? And they're all sort of competing for, there's a lot of people there. And so to get things done there is very different. You know, PSA had the benefit of just new ownership, and then SGC sort of had this, you know, opportunistic moment that they sort of understood the stakes and took advantage of it. But, you know, Beckett was just not as responsive or capable at that stage.
Yeah. So I think we've completely segued away from Gemrate. So I think what we should do now is just really quickly talk about PSA purchasing JSA, because I think that's, now that we're talking about this, I think this is the perfect time. So we did discuss this on a previous show, and I wanted to capture your thoughts on this, because I actually think this fits perfectly into the conversation, because you can see where PSA is heading with this and, you know, why they would want to do it. Yeah.
Well, just PSA, you mean CGC acquiring JSA?
Sorry, CGC. Yep, that's exactly right. Yeah, my mistake. Yep.
Just want to make sure we weren't talking about PSA SGC. But yes, so CGC, I think what's most important to me, because I'm not a big autograph authenticator. Like, I don't participate aggressively in that market or rarely even in that sense, especially for like in-person autos and things like that. But what I do think is, like, it's important to understand that, like, CGC, despite sort of like the lack of buzz sometimes around their brand, they do really well in comics, and they do really well in coins, and they do really well in TCG cards. In sports, they're often dismissed, but I think what people have to recognize is just like, they're here to stay. You know, this is not like, I at least like that's the picture they're painting for me with this acquisition, is it's just like this, they're doing a ton of work. Like, whether or not that resonates with the hobby, they went to the show in Asia and did on-site grading, you know, which drove a lot of their recent sort of CGC, TCG activity, and also some of their like sports activity. They did a ton of soccer cards over there recently. They're doing a lot of partnerships. They were the first one to work with ComC in this space. And so they're putting a lot of like pieces in place to stay relevant and sort of increase their brand presence. It's just, it takes, my whole thing with this grading space is it's a really loyal and sort of like tribal and sort of hard space to break through, and you kind of need some sort of shakeup for an opportunity to emerge. And that's kind of what happened with SGC with the pandemic and Beckett not being sort of super responsive and PSA having basically a shutdown. And so, you know, you need
it's like a 12
sort of
backlog.
Disturbance. You need sort of some disturbance. And so I think CGC, what they're doing is positioning themselves well for like the next big opportunity. But in the meantime, it's just like a slow grind, which they're putting a lot of pieces in place. And this JSA acquisition is another place for them to sort of like really just, you know, put a flag in the ground and say, hey, we care about this space and we're investing in it. And so that's where I find it to be most interesting. I'm not totally sure, like from a day-to-day standpoint, like what that means for their business and how that changes their business. But I do think it's certainly meaningful.
I really wanted to get your insight onto that. So I really appreciate that. And I think that's more interesting than what I'm about to say. But I think at the end of the day, for me, where I land on this is that PSA is going to have the lion's share of grading. I think we can all agree on that. That's done and dusted. But I don't think that means that there's not other opportunities within the market. And you touched on it perfectly, coins. There's a lot of people out there that do actually collect coins. And so they can take that marketplace. And I actually would say, let's just say they only did that. I think that would still be a profitable business. There's no way that's not something that's viable. And then you spoke about comic books. And I think, again, that's like a really, you know, big part out there. Maybe a little bit to me that's less interesting, but I still think it's out there. I think people do like to get people to sign cards, then to get them authenticated. I think that is a thing. So maybe that's, again, their niche in NBA cards. Not so much is PSA a leader in that space and do people really want to do it? I don't know. Yes, that probably is currently the case, but maybe that's like the niche that or the small market share that they do get in NBA cards. So that's where I like this, you know, the most. And look, to be honest, taking this full circle back to BGS, that's where I think they need to now work out where do they fit in to all of this. And they need to then like put their heels down and say, okay, we're going to be the leaders in video games, or we're going to be the leaders in CD grading and authentication. Maybe that's the next thing that comes along and they can take their legacy and, you know, say we've lost on sports cards, but this is the next thing we're going to do. Because that seems to me like the next popular thing that's coming along that BGS could do.
Yeah, I mean, just to comment on one more item that I think you sort of just started to touch on, which is interesting, which is, you know, if you think about, I grade frequently. I grade less now. I grade a lot less, and we can speak to why I'm not grading. But I'm not grading a lot right now. But when I do grade, I have a lot of, like, I do a lot of baseball cards, which autographs are really important in baseball in particular. And when you send a card in with an autograph versus a non-autograph to PSA, it's a dramatically different experience, in the sense of you could send in a non-auto card and get it back in 2 weeks, but you could send in an auto card and it'll take 2 months, because it's just a very different queue and a very different process to actually not only grade the autograph. Obviously, that's not the hard part, but authenticating the autograph is the hard part. Yeah. And so there is an opportunity for somebody like a CGC to be what SGC was for sort of the non-graded, yeah. I mean, the non-auto cards, and sort of come in and say, hey, look, you don't have to wait 2 months to get your auto, you know, graded and authenticated. You can come to us and it'll be a much faster turnaround, a different experience. And so I don't know, you know, that's a big bet to place on sort of a short-term phenomenon. Like PSA, ideally, if they keep doing what they're doing, they're going to continue to reduce times to sort of, or turnaround times. But there's certainly like a window, and maybe that's one of the things that, you know, CGC sees with this acquisition. So there's definitely like an opportunity there, which I think is interesting.
I think we should close that up and move back to you, because I want to talk about you more. So tell us about what's happening next for Gemrate. And then I think we should also do a little run through. I want you to tell us about one of the features that you've been working on and how our listeners can use this. I thought maybe we could do like a live read and you can walk us through how it works. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the future, I mean, so our big push right now has been around this Universal Pop Report and this million cards, which is now 1.1 million cards. It's basically, we just want to have the best search and quickest search for population data, right? Yeah. And right now, you got to go to our website. We're for the first time really sort of trying to present this data in a way that's a little bit more mobile friendly. Like, I go to a lot of shows, I go to, you know, trade nights. I want to be able to look up population quickly. Yeah. And so the idea is that you can just look up any card. And the key is, even if we have not merged it into our sort of universal database of 1.1 million cards, we'll still show you the PSA card, the SGC card, the BGS card. They'll still be in that search reveal, but they just won't, we won't have done the work of saying, here's one view to look at them. You can still sort of quickly gauge the population across all of them. So our goal is just to continue to build out that database. So, but the biggest thing we've been doing, for example, is these universal pop reports, which is, think of it as like, you know, it's for the Excel junkies and many of the nerds of the hobby that just want to have like all the population data in a massive spreadsheet. And that's basically what we've done.
Yeah.
We're presenting it on the web. So we just published in the last 3 weeks, 2023 Prism, our full universal pop report. And this is sort of the direction of where we're going, which is you can see every card, not only that's been graded, but every card on that checklist. And why that's important is a few different reasons. One is you can sort of see like what's been graded and how that's being graded across the different grading companies. But for me, who I like, I pay attention to breaks. I like just seeing sort of like what's sort of appearing in the hobby. You can see what's not been hit yet. So sort of like what's still out there and potentially yeah. either not been pulled or has not yet at least been graded. So, but that's the idea is that you can sort of see it all in one big view. If you go to any of these pop reports, it's hard to sort of just understand the big picture of like, okay, I'm looking at 2023 Prism and I want to look at, you know, the Wemby sort of market as it relates to just like where, to what degree are these cards being graded? Are there certain parallels? I love this. What Gemrate really thrives on is sort of like the unnumbered case hit sort of phenomenon that we've been sort of seeing, you know, the last 10 years, which is like, you just don't know, right? Everybody says SSP in their listings, but is that truly SSP? I mean, we also just did 2023.
I'm going to call you out right now, actually, man. I feel like I sent you a few messages requesting some data around case hits and it never came back. So,
is this
proprietary information you're sitting on that you're not prepared to share? Is that what's happening here?
No. It's like, but so we just also did, you know, like, so for example, though, what's the Prismania is out of, you know, 2023 Prism. And I didn't prepare this, but I'm going to look it up right now.
Yeah, sure.
We're on this. But like the Prismania only has the most graded Prismania across all the grading companies, Steph Curry at 6 right now.
Okay.
6 cards, 5 at PSA, 1 at Beckett. And Wemby only has 4 that have shown up at PSA. Like when that came out that there was going to be a short print, super short print in Prism, people kind of dismissed it because there hasn't really been one of those in the last, you know, 5-10 years that was really super short print. And so
that's not how Prism works. Prism is like exactly. High volume, so many cards. It's like literally could be millions of them. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so the idea of these kind of like this new chase card, it's kind of flying under the radar. And then you look at the grading data and I don't know what these things have been moving at price wise, but like there are none of them showing up. It's kind of like a color blast equivalent in Prism, but it's, you know, obviously the design has to pay that off. I like the design, but you know, it's not for everybody, but that's like a way that you could quickly gauge to say like, okay, what does Prismania look like versus something else that's a little bit more common? Like you might want to look up, this just came out, so it's a bad example, but like people like Tiger Stripes.
Can we do Kabooms? Is that possible?
So I actually have like, we don't have this year's Kabooms to look at because it's not.
Any year Kaboom. Any year
so
Kaboom.
I do have, yeah. This yeah. is random. But yep. I have 2014 up right now because we just did released our Excalibur, which was where Kabooms were in 2014.
Yeah, sure.
Which was a target only SKU. So these are really low pop. But like Kaboom, for example, you know, there are the most graded Kaboom from 2014 is Steph Curry, which is at 40, which 60% of those are at Beckett, which is part of why this exists as well, is that if you were coming into the hobby today and you're like, oh, 2014 Kaboom, and you look at Steph Curry and you say there's only 14, that's not how the hobby was shaped, you know, and how people were working in this hobby 10 years ago. They yeah. were actually grading most of the stuff with Beckett. And so if you look at like the Beckett, sorry, this is getting into some nerdy data stuff here, but like the Beckett gem rate is 67% for that Steph Curry Kaboom from 2014. But that's because everybody graded them back then. And, it, you know, now these ones that are being graded by PSA,
so
you know,
just explain that.
Later.
Just break that down a little bit. So you said 67% gem rate. Just yep. to our people at home that might not entirely appreciate yep. that. Just break that down a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just saying out of the 24 that have been graded by Beckett, 67% of them have graded gem mint or higher.
So is that a 9.5 or higher?
Or yep. higher. Yep. Yeah. Yep. We on the site we just sort of generically lump everything gem mint or greater into one bucket. As just to show you like a gem mint or greater score. I don't write gem mint or greater, but that's what that means. Gem rate yeah. is referring to things that are gem mint or greater. But why I bring that up is 67% at Beckett, but there's been 14 that have been graded at PSA and none of them have gemmed because it's just a very different sort of, none of them have received, you know, PSA 10 at this stage. 14, yeah. 0 for 14. It's just a hard card to grade. But big picture, you should at least know that there's 40 of these, which is really low. If you were to look at like a, I don't have one up right now. Let me see if I can do that quickly. Oh, so I can do that.
While you're doing that, I'll just fill this space in, because in my head, I thought these were around sort of 25 to 50 each. But I thought that was much later, like maybe say 16, 17, 17, 18. So in my head now, I'm just sort of multiplying this out, because basically how the timeline works, as we're getting closer to 18, 19, so much more cards were printed. I think that's the easiest way to say it. So yep. Could you then speculate that there's 100 kabooms by the time we get to 18, 19?
So I pulled it up. So it's a good example of how to use Gemrate right now and why this is sort of what I at least sort of think of the value of this is like, I have 2014 Excalibur on here, and you could just compare the different kabooms within 2014 all in one view, right? Yep. But I don't have 2019 Crown Royal in there, which Crown Royale, which is where kabooms were that year. And that's not in the Universal sort of pop report in the sense of you can't see all the cards across the full set there. But if you go to Universal Search and just type in 2019 Zion Kaboom, we'll show you what that looks like across all the grading companies. And so that card, for example, has been graded 107 times. And so, you know, I was saying Steph Curry, 40, Zion, you know, 107. You know, it was a different time too. There's probably a lot of crack and resubs in there to some degree, although that card was grading at a 72% gem rate. So that's actually not true. It's grading really well versus like the Steph Curry, for example. But it shows you, yeah, there's almost three times as many kabooms that were printed in 2019. If you use that as like, if you believe that's like a fair proxy for like the supply or the print run.
I would say at the moment, there's nothing better to use that to support your hypothesis.
Well, that's why I love it, is these idea of these unnumbered cards that have a ton of value to them. Like I actually just recently bought an Evan Mobley Color Blast, which I never participate in that market because it's just too high end for sort of how I play in this card market. The Color Blast market in particular is really hard. But like, you know, I would never have made that purchase without at least going and looking at this data on Gemrate, which clearly I'm obviously biased because this is a tool that I've built. But there's only been 13 Color Blasts from, you know, 2011 that have emerged for Evan Mobley, for example. And one of the things that I'll look at, though, within that is say, like, who was actually the most graded player out of that set? And I'll make sure I'll look at Cade, or I'll look at Scotty, or I'll look at, you know, Jalen Green, and just say, like, okay, there's 13 Mobleys, but are there 40 Cades? And there's not. There's a lot less. But, like, that's sort of how I use these tools to say, like, if all of a sudden Evan Mobley looks like Duncan, you know, then where would his population potentially go? And so I use these tools to help me understand like these valuable cards, or at least like cards that have a lot of perceived value, and just like what does supply look like? And how do we sort of compare and contrast these different case hits, which everything's a case hit now. And so, you know, where I want to speak to a very recent example, though, is like, and I like these cards a lot, are the presentation cards that came out of Hoops, for example.
Yeah.
Right? Like those are really nice. It's actually by the same artist who did the 2014 Kabooms. Nobody knows that really, or at least the story's not come out much, but it's a gentleman out of Europe who did the 2013 and 2014 Kaboom sets, which are somewhat polarizing because they're much more of a graphic artist take on the hobby as opposed to like a true portrait of the player. And so he came back and they case hits and chases in the 2023 stuff. So he did the Don Ross insert and he did the Hoops insert this year. He did presentation. So anyways, but where I was going with that is if you
look at a case hit or a box hit though?
Good question. It's not a box hit. I don't think it's a box hit.
We must have got lucky then, because we pretty sure we got one per box.
You know what? You could be right though, because I thought they had a different, I guess there's no parallel of the presentations. It's just, I thought there
might have been. Unless there is a foil version and we didn't get the foil. We just got like a regular one.
Yeah, to be honest, I can't remember exactly what it is, but where I was going with that is it's certainly at least being pitched. And if you look at eBay listings, it's being pitched as a SSB, but there's already been 500 of those Wembys graded
presentations. Yeah, so can I be honest with you? I think it's a box hit. The only where I agree with you 100% is they are absolutely beautiful cards. They are easily the best card out of that set. And I think that's a really cheap way to pick up a beautiful card. Does that make sense? So, and totally, I love that. Totally. I love that for the hobby, because you were talking about this with Color Blast before and Kabooms. Not everyone can afford them. So this, in my head, this is where this fits into the hobby perfectly. You can go out and get one of these for $50 to $100. I don't think these are going to be long-term collectible. I think the pop on this is going to be quite high, mate, to be honest. I'm just looking on eBay now. There is oodles of these for sale, like hundreds
of them. Even Wembys or no?
Ah, there's just – everyone's here. There's heaps of Wembys though. Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely a – again, I don't know, people are pitching it a certain way versus the reality of how many of those were printed. But the idea is you could quickly gauge that, right? And it's not, most of those are being graded with PSA today. So like you could pick this up from the PSA pop report, but it's still useful to know. And then what we're trying to help you do is see like the actual gem rate. So what percent, so where that's important with this presentation set, for example, is the Wemby's grading at like a 67% gem rate. But like there's some players in here in particular, like Jason Tatum, he's got a lot graded. He's got 140 graded, but they're a 40% gem rate. So like if you're buying a Tatum, one, you might value the PSA 10 a little bit more because they're a harder grade, or yeah, you can't, you're less likely to buy those raw and have success. So you just need to be aware that for whatever reason, the Tatums came off the printing press, you know, not the same way that the others in this set were coming off of it.
This is so not a blank slate from last year.
No, I was listening to you guys talk about the new blank slates, 'cause I love Court Kings, and yeah, the new, you know, these new black blank slates are fascinating.
I love them. And I think I'm in the minority on this. We did a social media post about it and people were just poo-pooing it from start to finish.
Well, you touched on what I think is key. And like, you look at the gem rates for blank slates, you have a hard time finding a card that's worth that much money in the hobby that gems at that high of a rate. I mean, it's like 90, 95% gem rates for almost all the blank slates, especially like the earlier ones. I mean, which is interesting because that's why the raw sell for such a high price, because versus like the PS, you won't get like a multiplier that's 3x on a blank slate. Like you'll get a multiplier that's like 2x because people have already factored in the idea that this is going to grade well.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you don't definitely see that with these 2023, they're not going to grade nearly as well.
Look, I'm really proud that we've just deep dived into a hoops card, to be honest. I'm loving this. Sorry, I interrupted you. Keep going, man.
No, I was basically going to end that segment just saying, you know, that's kind of the idea of like what we're trying to bring to the hobby is just these tools that allow you to sort of make sense of things that are a little bit harder, you know, data that's pretty hard to come by. If you were to go to each one of those individual pop reports, what we just talked about, you know, that'd take you a couple hours to sort of like try to piece together like what's happening with hoops and copying and pasting that in Excel and thinking about presentations, the way that, you know, all the different grading companies list the stuff is just not user-friendly. So the idea is this is just an easy way to look it up. Or it's something where, like, you know, you asked me to look up a Kaboom card that wasn't yet on our Universal Pop Report, and I could look that up in, you know, 3 seconds, which is nice. And so the idea is just, like, there's a lot of great data in this hobby that exists, but it's not always available in the most user-friendly way. And so that's where our focus has been. There's other stuff we want to do on top of that. This will facilitate. But, like, this is sort of, like, the baseline we want to establish of, like, we've got a lot of really good data. You can export all of it to Excel, run your own sort of analyses on it if you want, and you can just kind of have at it. But the data's in a much more sort of user-friendly and accessible format now.
I think to show my love to you and also to be kind to you, that was some of the stuff we spoke about earlier. It's like there's a lot of data here, but how do you crunch it all?
Right, right, right.
And I feel like this is what you've done in the last 12 months. You've taken something that was very data-heavy and now made it into something that's very usable. And I think if your company is going to take that, you know, next gigantic step, I think this is where it's going to be at. So honestly, I'm so happy to see all these new features that you built in, and it's really interesting, mate, honestly. So I think what we should do now is just take a very short break, and then we'll come back with our next segment. While we are taking the break, if everyone at home either wants to get their desktop ready or their mobile phone, we'll do a walkthrough with Ryan. Thank you to our friends EJ Cards for your ongoing support and sponsorship for our show. EJ Cards are a specialty card shop located in 394 to 398 Middleborough Road in Blackburn, Victoria. You can also find them at www.ejcards.com.au, where you'll find a whole range of sports cards, NBA, soccer, cricket, UFC, USA football, baseball, racing, WWE, supplies, and mystery packs, which is something they're really very much known for. The Carson mystery packs for Pokemon, Rimps mystery packs, soccer mystery packs. They've got Japanese Pokemon mystery packs at the moment too. So check out their website for that. Also go to Facebook, EJ Sports Breaks, where you'll find Jules ripping wax for you almost every single day. For listeners of the show, we have a promo code, which you'll find in the podcast description. Any orders over $50 get free express shipping. Thank you, EJ Cards, for your support. Alrighty, we are back with Ryan from Gemrate, and I hope you've got your devices ready. Ryan is going to step us through.
Yeah, so I'm just going to walk through and sort of close the loop on this universal search. So the thing that I think is most valuable for the audience today, because I do think the universal pop report and sort of like the Excel-like features are definitely more for like when you're in research mode and you're making a big purchase. But like, you know, most of us want this data when we're at a trade show.
Yeah.
Right. This is where I find the most in sort of immediate value of what we've built. And so you just go to gemrate.com. And if you're on your phone, we don't have a mobile app. People have asked us about it. It's not on our near-term roadmap, but it's definitely something we're thinking about. And then if you just do the little drop-down, there's a universal search there. And this is kind of the thing that I go to most frequently at shows. And you can just enter in the card details. And so give me any recent purchases you've made or anything that's been on your watch list.
Probably the card that I'm the most happiest that I picked up recently was the CJ McCollum Rookie Silver PSA 10.
All right, is that 2013? All right, so what I would do in here is 2013 Prism Silver, and then I would just start to type in McCollum, which I'm thinking is his rookie year. Yes, so okay.
Does the search work better when you have the year? You can't just search for the player's name?
You could. Well, it works better just in the sense of if you just typed in Prism Silver McCollum, you're going to get back all years, right? And it's not going to weight it towards his rookie year. I mean, it will sort of slightly do that because that's going to be the most graded of the cards, but it's not going to sort of like know for sure that's the one you're looking for. So I always type in. So if you want to have the most success with this, type the year first. Then I usually type the set. It doesn't have to be Panini Prism. You just type in Prism. You can type in Select. You know, you don't have to type in any sort. You can be very generic. Just a few keywords, though. So I typed in 2013 Prism Silver McCollum. And I really didn't even have to spell out McCollum. It sort of showed up there. But yeah, you go here and you see 2013 Panini Prism McCollum is in the dropdown. And you can. What's nice is on this UI, you know, I'm saying nice. I built this, so I need other people to tell me they like it as well.
No, tell us why it's nice. This is why we're here, man. Yeah.
But you can see within this sort of, this is one of the, we're trying to put a little bit more emphasis on design. And you can see there's like a little bubble that says Universal in green on there. You can see the total graded in blue. And the idea is just to show you like, okay, one, you don't even have to click into it to say like, oh, there's been 91 CJ McCollum Silver Prisms that have been graded across all the grading companies.
And how did you know that was? How did you know that was silver though?
So back in 2013, they didn't call them silvers. They just called them prisms. So 2012, 2013, they weren't calling them silvers yet. They were just calling them prisms. So I see there's a prism there, and there's also a listing two below that that says, it doesn't say base, it doesn't say anything, it just says 2013 prism,
yeah,
McCollum. And that has 927 graded. So two things that I immediately look at there. I'm like, oh, so the silver's a tenth, you know, the population of that's a tenth of the base,
yeah,
you know, and probably more likely to be graded too versus like a base McCollum.
Yeah.
So probably less than that actually. But then you can click into it. And the most important thing that I look at with this is it just, I look at the gem rate and I sort of just try to understand like, what did you say you bought a graded version?
PSA 10. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean like that's a pretty low pop card. I mean, if you click into it, you can see there's only been 23 of those that have been graded at 10 out of 50. It's only a 46% gem rate for PSA. First Beckett, which there's been 38 graded, but 34 were gems, so 90% gem rate. Which again, just shows you like the dynamic of the hobby versus like when McCollum was sort of emerging as an important player or a key player on Portland, right? Versus where anybody who finds a CJ in their collection is like, oh yeah, I should totally get this graded.
Yeah.
It's been in a, you know, tossed around in some sort of, you know, one row forever now. Yeah. So,
you know, he sat on the bench for the first few years. Like that was a really deep team when he went into that team. So I think that has a bit to do with that.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah, this is just like a quick understanding. And like, so the reason I'm taking on the perspective of like, you're now looking to move that. And I'm like, okay, I'm, you know, one of the big missing components of what we offer though, is we don't do anything with pricing and everybody always asks us about it and we're not doing anything there yet, but maybe in the future we'll do something, but it doesn't contextualize it. So like, I would like to know like, okay, there are 34 gems or greater out of BGS versus the 23 for PSA. And there's a couple for CGC. There's actually been none according to this graded by SGC at this stage. But which again just shows you like how different the hobby was. Like they're just not people grading 2013 prisms with SGC at that time or even recently. Yeah. But you know, you'd obviously want to know like the price too. Like was the PSA 10, how much of a premium did you pay? You know, or sometimes, you know, a lot of people like to buy the BGSs because they're like the quality and the, you know, the presumed quality of the card, as opposed to sort of the grade and the slab of the card or around the card. And so anyways, I use the data for something like this. And it just helps me sort of quickly understand like, what's the frame of reference for a CJ McCollum Prism Silver in 2013, which again is not something I'm going to know if I'm walking up to you at a trade night and that's your sort of marquee card that you're sort of putting in front of me. I'd have to quickly get that information. And the alternative would be, you could go to Card Ladder, who's one of our card partners, ladder. Who's like, right? So like we work with Card Ladder in a different context. They have a lot of the same information from our API, but they present it through the lens of like a single card and you'd go and find it there. And it's a lot of the same information. it just depends. You have to be a card ladder user, which is awesome, and you can get pricing information. But they present a lot of that same information with a bit of a different UI, but it's the same info. But the idea is to sort of contextualize this for you, because it'd be impossible, but it'd be a lot of work for you to go to the individual pop reports and try to figure out, like, what the heck is going on with the CJ McCollum card that came out 11 years ago.
Yeah, because when I did look at card ladder, it had the population of that at 23, which is the same as yours. So on card ladder, it says PSA 10, there's 23. And on yours, it says gems plus 23. And I think I was talking to you about this earlier in the show, and that's where I wasn't 100% clear. I thought that's what you meant, but I just wasn't 100% clear on it. That's why I wanted to ask you about that. Yeah.
Do you see on card ladder, they got that little book for, like, near the pop button too?
Yeah.
I'm guessing that's what you would click into there to see the full population too, right?
Yeah,
that's
right. Actually, okay.
Right. So yep. Same data. It's just through a different presentation. But my goal is not to sort of have people, if people want to come to gemrate.com, that's amazing. But I'm not building this so that, you know, I'm not monetizing this in the way that, like, I'm not charging, you know, it's free to the hobby. It's available for people to use. It's just a quick sort of at your fingertips. You're at a show and you want to learn pop really quickly. This tool is available to you. But I also am super happy if people find the same information on Card Ladder or any one of our partners, because I just want people to have better information available to them. But that's basically the use case. That's sort of the 101 of, like, this is a tool that, if, you know, and there's ways that you could just sort of save something like a search page to your iPhone as, like, an app if you wanted to. You could do that. But my basic pitch here is just know that it's sort of a tool that can be in your toolbox for when you're at a show and you want to understand population.
Yeah.
Another company that sort of does it well, that's not a customer of ours, but they only do it for, like, PSA and Beckett, is Alt. A lot of people like Alt for this because
we don't need to talk about Alt, Ryan. Come on.
No, but I just say, like, that is a company that's sort of presenting information in a similar style. They just don't have quite the same database at this stage. That's not really been their priority. But it's, again, this information is useful. And so the more people that sort of have it at their fingertips, the more educated the hobby is, and ultimately, like, the more people that will make decisions that they feel informed and confident about, which has basically been my pitch for the last, you know, few years, which is, if we want people to stick around in this hobby, it's not about saying, hey, look, this is a PSA Pop 2 when there's 52 of these in a Beckett slab because of the era and sort of it was a different paradigm, right? Like, nobody's going to feel good about that walking away with that transaction or from that transaction. Like, at least the buyer's not. And so my goal is to make sure buyers sort of feel informed and, you know, educated making these decisions.
Look, I think you're definitely making your message clearer. And I think that tool allows you to visually demonstrate that a lot easier, because I think that is hard to sort of conceptualize in your mind without the data in front of you. So I think it looks really, really good. So congratulations, mate. I'm sure you've had many sleepless nights trying to make this usable and, you know.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the support, and you guys have always been, you know, kind enough to mention it on the show. I mean, it definitely, to do what we're doing now took 2 years of behind the scenes work. So that's why when you sort of shouted out the million cards, like, I'm not promoting that aggressively, but it took 2 years to basically put that first million cards in place. It's not going to be as nearly as long. Hopefully it takes 6 months to get the next million, but that work supports making sure the search covers as many cards as possible.
Look, I think if you're running a small business, you do need to celebrate these things. And
Totally.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you do put so much time and effort into it. And if you don't celebrate, you know, what's the point? And I think a million cards is a really big deal. So yeah, congratulations. Like, I hope you did go out and celebrate, to be honest. Did you go out and celebrate?
I did.
Yeah.
Nothing crazy, but I did. It was definitely like one of those. Yeah, I did. Thank you. Good. Thank you for the therapy session. You can feel free to, you know, send an invoice. I owe you. Thanks for making me zoom out to see big picture.
Alrighty. So actually I've ticked off all the questions I want to ask you. So I want to open up the floor to you. You can talk about anything related to Gemrate. You can talk about anything that's scratching the back of your head hobby-wise that you just want to get off your chest. Let's go.
Yeah, I don't have too much, but the only thing that I was thinking about that might be just interesting that was sort of on my radar, and I know that you've spent some time thinking about, is just this Caitlin Clark phenomenon, which I think
let's talk about that. Yeah.
Well, I was just doing some research into sort of like how much she's sort of growing within the hobby through the lens of supply and sort of just like the increase, you know, because I think 2020 Bowman U was her first appearance in sort of a licensed trading card, and then 2023 Bowman U, same, you know, it's her second year card. But I don't know if the print runs changed or whatever, but I mean, I was just looking at recent stats, and I mean, she's already in the top graded female athletes all time, like high on that list. Like, I'm sure maybe Serena's above her, but like, you know, and that's obviously, like, trying to think. Yeah, Serena has 30,000 cards. So Serena, the greatest, you know, considered by many one of the greatest female athletes of all time, has 30,000 cards across all the great companies.
Serena, the tennis player, or Sabrina, yeah, Serena, the basketball player?
Yeah, 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 Serena Williams. Serena Williams, yep. Right? So just sort of like setting sort of the high end of like, yeah, where this could go for her, right? Like 30,000 cards. And then you quickly look, and I'm going down this list of like the all-time top-graded athletes, and I'm looking for, you know, the next closest female. And I'm not going through the full list live on this call, but, you know, we are getting a point. Caitlin Clark already has 16,000 cards graded, you know, 2 years into this phenomenon. And
I don't think
7,000 of those are in the last 2 months.
I don't think this is a conversation. Can I be honest with you? For two reasons. Tennis, in my head, is a bit like cricket. It's a very, very popular sport, but there is not that collective demand out there for that type of stuff. So I think, let's just say, if you're using that as a benchmark, you can easily, this is not even controversial, you can say she's going to go 10x that easy.
Well, yeah, give me, I mean, so think of a WNBA player or another comp that you want me to look at, and I'll give you sort of how many they've graded. So you wanted, you said Sabrina.
Can I just pad this out for two more seconds? So yeah, the reason this is actually exciting for WNBA collectors is because at the moment she's with Topps and Fanatics, right? And the concern was she wasn't going to be signing in Panini because they've got the license, right, for WNBA. And that is most likely going to be one license they will be hanging on to. It seems like at this point, Fanatics haven't taken over WNBA.
Right.
Caitlin Clark is a really good business person. And, you know, we talk about LeBron. You remember that whole narrative he made, I want to be a billionaire?
Mm-hmm.
And he did a lot of really, really clever things in his career. So you can make the argument that Caitlin Clark is going to be like the LeBron James of WNBA. And also, too, from a business perspective, I kind of get the feeling they're using LeBron as like the model. So she's already endorsing a whole bunch of stuff. She's making a lot of money in college. So some people think she's going to make more money in college than in pro, which is a crazy thought process, but, you know, that's the world we live in. So she's actually signed with Panini and she signed for Fanatics. So she's going to be coming into WNBA products hot. And I think that the buzz that's currently with Bowman University, you need to keep this all in perspective. So people are going crazy for this stuff now. I would say that's fine. Get excited. Enjoy the momentum, but don't go spending all of your money on that stuff, because as soon as the pro stuff comes out, we've seen this happen before with Prism Draft. All this university stuff is really good for a short window, but it ultimately all, like, you know, dips off and goes down. So, like, that's fine. They can grade as much stuff as they want, but I'm just, like, sort of trying to create this narrative of, like, she's coming to Panini. And
Yeah.
I think you also need to take into context, too, of like, if Panini's going to be losing every other NBA athlete, I think they're going to put her, you know, front and center of all of their marketing, of all of their products. And I think it's going to be really good for WNBA collectors. I think it's actually a very exciting time. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very interesting. I do think, like what you're saying in general, like I'm very intrigued. Like, if I think there's one opportunity to sort of, you know, the hobby sort of is very narrative driven, and like, you know, things can change basically. Like things that, you know, the sort of perception or sort of the things that are favorable in the hobby can definitely be very different 10 years from now. I try to often think about what could be different, you know, 10 years from now versus how things are perceived today. And I do think like NIL is one of the few moments we've had in this hobby where like people potentially could perceive the card landscape differently and like what it means for somebody's first card or rookie card or sort of their initial card. So I do think,
do you mean like the Caitlin Clark Bowman University card? Is that what you're talking about?
I do. In general, I mean, in the context of what we're talking about in general, I think that also matters.
Okay. So, sure. Like, so that's like an opposite opinion to what I've got. So tell people the alternate thought. I think that's really good to have that.
I just think there's an opportunity for maybe, you know, I mean, I think if Panini has a chance to stick around in this hobby, like, and if Fanatics has risk in this hobby, is that people just start signing people way earlier and printing more cards much earlier in their sort of, you know, quote unquote careers when people are in high school or in college, because there's going to be making money a lot earlier. And so, you know, if you look at ultimately like a lot of the cards that people do put a lot of value behind, it's your first appearance. It's not always your, you know, for example, there are Babe Ruth cards that are, before he was even in the majors, his minor league. I'm going way out of like, you know, way beyond sort of this conversation topic, but like,
I don't mind this though, because in particular examples, that is the right thing to do. And I think Caitlin Clark is that special example where you can use, I know this is like a little bit sacrilegious for some people, I get that, but I can also understand how you can make that argument of Babe Ruth and Caitlin Clark at the same time. Go on. I'm totally fine with this.
Well, that's an extreme example, and it's not really like
– No, it's totally fine, though. It's a basketball podcast. Yeah.
But my point is basically I do think if people start to gravitate towards Bowman first, you may not care about that WNBA card, especially because this is where sort of she rose to this crazy popularity and phenomenon. And like that ultimately may be worth way more, and especially if what you're saying is true, which is like if Panini's going to pump out – thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of Caitlin Clark cards because this is sort of the saving grace, then I actually do like the idea of like these first to print Bowman U cards having staying power versus like I don't want her WNBA rookie cards maybe nearly as much as I want Iowa cards because this is sort of like where her brand was established or sort of like her presence became really well known. So yeah, my only point with that is that may not be the reality today, but 10 years from now, if we look back, that may be the cards that people ultimately are like, oh, this is when she sort of broke through and sort of became extremely culture relevant, changed the game. It's equivalent, like if Steph Curry, I don't know, it's the same phenomenon. This isn't going to work the way that I wanted to, but like if Steph Curry had a Davidson card that came out when he became like all of a sudden like the breakout star of the NCAA tournament in 2007, like that would be really interesting. I don't know if that's the same because Steph's legacy is the 2015 through 2020. 2022 run, but I do think like people would pay a significant price for a Curry card and a Davidson uniform, for example. I don't know that's true because it's different with the NBA where things are a lot more established. But point being is, I just like to challenge sort of the certain norms that we have in the hobby, and I do think like Caitlin Clark is different, and sort of the way that she's perceived is different. And so I do think it's interesting that she's got 16,000 cards graded. She might have 100. To your point, she may be 200,000 cards graded by the time she's done with a WNBA career or something like that. And so maybe those 16,000 cards that are in the market today have more staying power than they traditionally would.
Okay. Look, I love it when those alternative sort of the challenge my own sort of thought process. So I've got no trouble with that at all. Maybe the big picture here, the thing we're actually missing is that there is something changing in the hobby in that what we perceived as amateur athletes and now becoming professional athletes when they weren't previously. And so this actually might be something that's going to be happening, more often. So I don't follow college basketball at all in terms of like the men's stuff. And the only reason why I'm following the women's college is because of Caitlin Clark. Like, so I'm being very transparent about that, but maybe there's actually a men's player out there who people are chasing at the moment, and those cards are going to be important. And we haven't had that in the last few years because of all the different, rules around it. So I'm just trying to think about this Prism draft. I mean, they did sign in that though, didn't they?
Yeah. So I do think that's what Prism draft is interesting because you're bringing up some good points, and I don't necessarily know that I have counters to them, but like Prism draft is sort of seen as like, it's just not really well. I mean, it's fine. It's not like really well produced. It's not really like different than Prism Core in the sense of like, it's just an early preview of it where they're not in their, pro uniforms. So it's not really special, and it's just taking advantage of sort of like a small window. It feels like very much like a money grab and opportunistic play in the hobby. Whereas like these Caitlin Clark Bowman U cards are 2 years before she even had a, established sort of college career and was like clearly going to be a breakout. What I mean by that is like, well, if like, so I was looking up Cooper Flagg is like the person that's getting a lot of hype. I don't know if you're familiar with Cooper Flagg and like how familiar you are, but he's sort of like the most hyped up player. I think he's going to Duke next year, but he's going to be a one and done for sure. He's going to be the first pick in the 2025 NBA draft.
I know his name, but that's all I know. Like, yeah.
Cooper Flagg is supposed to be like the next chance for like a breakout,
there's a Larry Bird comparison, isn't there?
Maybe I don't know enough about his background to verify that probably, but that sounds right. But I have literally no idea, so I'm speaking beyond my knowledge at this stage. But it is an interesting, like the NBA is much more established, obviously, in how people think about these things. But to your point, and where I want to go with that is Cooper Flagg's getting paid. Like he's certainly getting paid, and so like the idea of him being an amateur is no longer really the same as what it was when everybody else was sort of you know, establishing themselves 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And so, you know, the idea that maybe he's no longer an amateur and that he is professional, he's just professional in a college uniform. And, you know, maybe my only point with that is I try to challenge the way that people might think about these first cards. And so I think it's a lot more obvious in my mind with Caitlin Clark, where there's sort of not as many norms established. There's not really a WNBA market that's been established. But with Cooper Flagg, it would be a different story. Like, it still would take many, many years before that story might even begin to change. But I do think there's at least a chance for somebody like Panini to produce really well done cards that when you're in high school, that maybe all of a sudden sort of change the way that people think about
God, that cards. Actually, look, so I wanted you to finish your thing, but first of all, I'm going to say, how dare you say that Prism Draft isn't well produced? You know my love for that product. I feel like you're personally attacking me right now. So just to present the alternate view on that, I actually think it's a very creative product. So what this is my perspective. I think they throw stuff at the wall in that product and they see what sticks. And then what you see is in the next Prism NBA version, then you'll see some of the parallels that have come through that they've tried. And so the alternate take to that is they try all these different parallels that never make it. So you sort of get, you know, a little bit in my head.
It's like it's Chronicles Light, you know, for Prism.
Yeah. Yeah, and the same argument too for a little bit for me is WNBA Prism. I think they've tried some things in that. So the silver cracked ice, they were first in WNBA. Then they liked that, then they rolled it out to NBA. So I like that type of stuff. Like, for me, that just kind of like speaks to me a little bit. So look, we're actually at the hour mark already. Sorry, you're going to say something. Go.
I was just going to apologize for throwing shade on Prism draft picks.
Sorry. I accept your apology, but I'm still low key mad at you, man, to be honest. Yeah, I don't think you're going to be coming back for a fourth episode. That's it.
Totally fair. I get it.
This next ad break is brought to you by Slambox, Australia's best value basketball repacks. Visit www.slambox.com.au to check out the latest series or join the Slambox Facebook page and message them directly. Slambox features big-name autos including Giannis, Zion, LaMelo, Banchero, Chet, Ja, Tatum, and more. Super short prints, case hits from a variety of different products including National Treasures, Flawless, Noir, Immaculate, Impeccable, and more. Slambox has different tiered product levels to cater for all budget levels and collector preferences. Thank you, Slambox, for your support. Alrighty, we are back. Thank you very much for coming back. So this next segment is really, I'm trying to do a generate light here. So if you go to our Facebook page, You Can't Cop This NBA Podcast, in the pinned post, you'll find a post. And at the top, it says time for the stats fiends to come out in full strength. At the bottom of that, there'll be a Google Docs link. So click on that and then you'll see exactly what we're talking about. So this is something, to be honest, I've been talking about for about 3 months and I just haven't gotten around to doing it. But I wanted to take the All-Star votes totals and then put that into a spreadsheet and then put the prices next to it for the rookie silver PSA 10s. That's the data points that I've used. So then I wanted to then look at it and say, well, is there something on here that you think is interesting that might help you drive, say, a purchase or, in lieu of that, a sale? So I think looking at this in terms of using it for something ideal, I like Tyrese Maxey. Just first off the bat, that's where I'm going with this, because I think in terms of popularity, he's not right at the very top, but he's also not right at the very bottom. And the other thing I like about this too is just the population of it. So he's sitting currently at 224 USD. Population of this is 432. I probably do think this is going to go up to 800 to 1,000 in the next 2 years. So you do need to factor that in a little bit for that. But in terms of him, you know, coming out this year, and I think the other thing too I like about Maxey is that I think he's passed the litmus test, because with Embiid being out, realistically, he was carrying that team's offense. And to a degree, he also carries them defensively in the backcourt, because the thing about the NBA at the moment for me is there's not a lot of places where you can hide people. And I really feel that if you can't defend in the league, that shows up a lot. And when I watch Maxey play, I never really feel like he's a turnstile. So I like it for those reasons. That's more of a prospecting pick for me. But then if you go right up to the very top, this to me, let's just look at the top three. So the top three is Giannis, LeBron, and Tatum. The prices at the very top is Giannis at 11,000, LeBron at 24,000, and then Tatum at 745. So you would immediately say, well, Tatum is the one to jump onto. He's very popular. He's a fraction of the price of the other ones, which is all true. But where I think that that argument falls down is the population. So population for Tatum is 849. For LeBron, it's 177. But the one that I think is, for me, the most interesting or compelling, you might say, is the Giannis. So that's a population of 79. So I think if I was looking to buy one of those three based on this data alone, I'd be looking at the Giannis.
So can I make a couple comments?
I would love you to.
So a couple of things. So this is a great example though, of where like this is it's a good starting point, but like a dangerous sort of analysis to start, in the sense of like when you're looking at Giannis and you're looking at, you know, PSA 10 silvers, this is a, you know, 2013 rookie, which Beckett, you know, you're completely sort of dismissing any sort of BGS cards that are out there, right? Same for like Embiid and Jokic, and like, is Jokic designer, right?
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
And so one, I would immediately sort of like, I mean, good. This is a good starting point, as I'm saying. Like, I think this is how a lot of people would approach looking at this data. But I certainly, me as somebody who's like, oh, where would I invest? I would want to know what the other side of that equation is, like specifically BGS, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So I think that's super important to factor when you're looking at something like this.
So and then do the you second think thing that is, if I built this out, population being total population, that would be more relevant?
I think you'd have a better understanding. So the second comment I had was, I think I don't ever look at like prices in isolation, because you want to know population, to what you were just saying, right? Yeah. And so that's where you have to be careful with this. And so I don't like to say market cap, because I think that's got like a negative connotation towards it. But like, you want to know how much people have spent on this card, and it's still just market cap. It's just sort of a repositioning of it.
Can you explain market gap to people at home that might not understand that? Because I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah,
I think I know what you're saying, but I'm not 100% sure. Yeah.
So market cap at the peak of sort of the hobby in 2021 was like a way that a lot of people were sort of trying to say price alone doesn't tell the story of how much a card is worth, or how much its perceived value is in the hobby, because the population can be very different. And so looking at your spreadsheet in particular, again, like the Tatum, well, let me try to find like a really good example here. So you have Jokic and Durant. That's actually a good example, but it's not going to sort of yield the insight I want. Let me think of see if I can find a better one here. But the idea is basically you want to learn how much has actually been spent on that card. And market cap is just another way of saying how much has been spent on that card. And you're taking the total, you're taking the price, and you're multiplying it times the population.
Okay.
And you can do that for a single grade, but a lot of people will do that for like all grades of a card too, to be like, how much has actually been spent on all of the different variations, or sort of the different grades of LeBron's, you know, Topps Chrome.
I'm definitely glad I asked you this question, because I was way off.
Oh, really? Yeah. So the idea, so why I did this for your analysis here, and like what's super interesting about this is, you know, if you look at this, the lowest price person, like Paul George is the lowest at $200.
That's a tricky one, because like he doesn't have a Prism rookie card. So that was prestige. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So let's look at a different player then. But like, if you look at Paolo.
Yeah, let's do Paolo. Yeah.
But I'm gonna compare Paolo to Jaylen Brown, okay? So Paolo is $270 and Jaylen Brown is $222. So they're roughly in the ballpark of each other, right? You know, one's 25% less than the other one, 20% less, but they're in the neighborhood. And so, but the key is there's half as many of those Jaylen Browns as there are Paolo. So $150,000 has been spent on Paolo's PSA 10s, Prism Silvers. And only $61,000 isn't spent on Jaylen Brown's Prism Silver PSA 10s.
Yeah.
And so that sort of helps me understand. So that's the concept of market cap, or sort of just like how much spend has been put into these players. And so what it tells me is like, one, like there's just not that much enthusiasm, or at least Jaylen Brown has sort of never sort of gotten over that threshold of being like majorly invested in this hobby.
Yeah.
Paolo has probably a lot of hype still, not even a lot of hype, but some hype still built into where he's at. But then you look at somebody like, I don't know, like Maxi and Brunson are also in the $200 range. They've also only have collectively, sorry, I'm looking at what I wrote on my spreadsheet here, but you know, Maxi has 95,000 spent against this card and Brunson has 84,000 spent on this card. So point being is, you know, you have somebody like Paolo who's worth, you know, their spend on their PSA 10s. Paolo's spend is twice as many as any one of those three players. Those
yeah,
three
right.
players are all half the amount of spend into that market. So the way that I read that is Paolo's market probably has some room to drop. And then also, you know, maybe one of those players that I just discussed is underappreciated, undervalued in this market, you know, relatively speaking. But that's kind of the idea of market cap. And so what I would do to finish the thought of what I was saying before is you also want to factor in like the BGS spend on this too, yeah, because that's a very material part of this story that's not included when you're only looking at PSA 10.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
I would
yeah.
also want to look at like how many Giannis, because like Giannis, oh, just to like contextualize this a little bit further, because you were saying like, let's look at the top of this chart. When you look at the market cap or the total amount spent, like Giannis has, so I said Paolo was 150K, Giannis is 900,000, LeBron's 4.3 million, Tatum is 600,000, Jokic is 500,000, Durant's 600,000. Even that's an interesting one. Like, you know, despite the run that Jokic is on, Durant, who's obviously like considered like one of the all-time great scorers at this stage, is at 600,000. Luka's still 2.5 million. And I know you guys love to talk about Luka on this podcast. And so like, I just mentioned all, you could wrap up every one of those players except for LeBron just to get to Luka and sort of what their valuation is of their Prism PSA 10 market. So I use this data to sort of say like how much is being spent, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's how much it's being, how much it's going to be worth, but it is a good signal of just like who are the players that people are perceived to be collectible and how much is into that market.
Yeah.
Cause that could mean either it's a player that's having a hard time getting over the collectability threshold of like Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, definitely.
Just second fiddle, but like yeah. a great player, but he can't sort of emerge as somebody that's super truly collectible in this market.
Yeah.
Cause nobody was really invested in to begin with. The hobby sort of emerged and he was sort of not necessarily thriving at that time. And he was still sort of emerging himself. And he just didn't have like he came out, 2016 is not a big year in the hobby.
He came out very raw though. I think that was part of it. And then I think if you're being practical too, then he was 1 year later immediately overshadowed by Tatum. I think
right.
that is still where he's at in my view.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally. And the Tatum market, you know, based on his numbers is, you know, 10X. The Jaylen Brown argument. I mean, the Jaylen Brown market, which, you know, maybe that's too wide of a gap. I don't know. Like, there's some people who have said that Jaylen's outplayed Tatum the last, you know, couple months. And so maybe that's just a opportunity in the market. But the key is where I was going with that is like the other challenge you have is somebody when Luka's market has 2.5 million invested into it, there's a lot of people who are invested in it and are going to protect it. And so they're going to buy cards on the way down to keep the price high, or they think they're undervalued relative to like where they've been. And so they continue to sort of like prop up a market. So once you sort of like get this cross this threshold of like you're a super collectible player, you tend to stay there a lot longer than you might otherwise. Like Trae Young's the opposite example of like somebody who was in that place and who's sort of fallen off the map. But like a lot, it's really hard to fall off quickly.
Can I jump in there for 2 seconds? So the Trae Young sure. is actually really interesting because putting my sports card conspiracy hat on right now, there was a lot of rumors going around. There was like a group,
Shilling.
A group basically dedicated their lives to keeping the prices up.
Yeah.
And that to me is really interesting. So he's currently trading at $168. So clearly they did the best that they could, you know, to keep the prices up. The other thing that when I see that, what it actually makes me think is I don't think this is the best data collection ever. And you've already pointed out some really interesting things, but also too, it might not always capture the whole picture. So for example, yeah, the Trae Young is trading at $168, but that doesn't mean that every single Trae Young card is not worth collecting at a price point. Like I would stay away from a PSA 10, but there might be other Trae Young cards that, you know, I'd be looking at, like the rookie Kaboom. Or a color yep. blast. You talked about those earlier today. So sorry, I interrupted you.
No. I love this though. This is like the type of analysis that I think is really intriguing, but I do like to take it to like the total amount spent as opposed to the price, because it just sort of reframes how we think about it. Like I look at this and I love this data because I'm like, oh, like James Harden has 60,000 spent on him. Jaylen Brown, like I said, 60. Another really interesting one is Damian Lillard has 60,000 spent against his, you know, PSA 10. Anthony Davis, 47,000. Where I'm going with that is just like you can kind of see these players who were relevant but like and super interesting and still are factors in the NBA today, but like they've sort of missed their moment now, and like they're gonna have a hard time ever sort of like, it's if you got in today at this price you could see some upside, but like they're not going to reach sort of these like peaks that some of these other players are. Like they're never going to approach sort of the amount of spend that you see on like the players with the hype, obviously. So it just speaks to like how much hype plays into this, and also yeah. sort of like once the shine wears off, you get thrown into the second, maybe third tier bucket of like you were a super relevant player for a time frame, but like you're not going to sort of stand out and like stand the test of time of being like somebody that's collectible for like 50 years broadly, where like yeah. it's price appreciation. It's more of like you'll have a collector, you'll have a market of collectors that care, but it's not going to be somebody that's like a mainstream, highly sought after player, you know, down the line. Like James Harden is a perfect example of that for me, of like, had a lot of collectability, has a pretty big base actually for some time, I think, but is not somebody who's going to stand the test of time of like being super collected 15 years from now. Even though he's going to be on like, he's on the NBA top 75 and like is that type of player, he's not going to sort of stand the test of time in my mind.
So that price of 2,728, is that a buy, hold, or sell for you of James Harden?
Sell. Well, I don't know. I'm quick to say that because I'm not like the biggest Harden fan, but I just don't think like people like his style of play. And like, I just think like his stats don't support his perception in the hobby or in NBA culture. And so I just think like James Harden is going to be one of these guys where like he was an era beneficiary in some ways and has never proven himself to be a winner. So like James Harden at $2,700, if the hobby just stayed neutral and like there's not like growth, I would not be buying James Harden like long term.
So what I want to do long term is actually build this out a bit more. So let's say I get it down to 75 players, and this is where I was going in my head, this would be good, is to like basically use it for prospecting. So actually, who is popular in the community but hobby wise is not getting the numbers? So the one that also stands out to me using that thought process is Shengun. So can you use this data to say actually, well, Shengun is very popular at the moment, you know?
Oh yeah, he's on this list, huh?
Okay. Yeah, so like 1.8 million votes, currently trading at $163, you know, does he have a bit of upside there? I think it's tricky buying into big men, like I get that, but at the same time too, I sort of like it for that. For me, the enjoyable part for me about this conversation is how that I see one picture and you see a completely different portrait. So it's actually making me think I need to add some more columns to this and build this out a little bit more. And so, yeah, I'll definitely be stealing your ideas, Ryan.
Well, no, I love it. This is the stuff though, that a level of depth that oftentimes sort of, you know, gets cut into small segments of like a YouTube clip that you see. And it's like, that's why people stick to price, because it's just easy to digest. But I think like when you zoom out, or actually you go deep into the data and you sort of look at like how much is being spent on them, I just think it's a really fascinating story. Like Shengun, for example, 35,000 spent against his PSA 10 versus like Jimmy Butler only has 30,000 spent against his, or like, you know, or somebody else like Anthony Davis, 47,000. So like basically that's saying like, you know, Shengun's sort of trajectory is sort of somewhat similar to Anthony Davis's in the sense of like, that's where he's being priced today. And so he needs to show a career that's going to sort of like surpass that if he wants to continue to sort of appreciate in price. Like right now I use this to be like, is there any sort of world where like Shengun is going to be Anthony Davis quality? And if so, he's probably reasonably priced today. But like, if you want him to really thrive, he's going to have to sort of change his trajectory to be like, okay, I'm going to be a multi MVP title winner. And then you maybe start to push into like, who else is on this? Like, you know, obviously like Jokic and stuff like that.
So you took the words out of my mouth. I think people that prospect on Shengun are saying he's going to be the next Jokic.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I think that's the thought process. They're not thinking about Anthony Davis. The athleticism just isn't there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I'm more speaking sort of towards like their resume in the NBA, but yes, like,
yeah,
that's where people want Shengun to go, is to the Jokic territory for sure, which would mean, you know, that'd be a 20x still of where he's at today.
Final thoughts. What would you like to talk about before we sign off?
That's it. This is a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Thanks for letting me nerd out on some of the data. Hopefully it didn't put everybody to sleep, but I do think there's a lot of really great data that's becoming more and more accessible in this hobby. Yeah. And if you like to go deep on it, like that's my wheelhouse. So I always enjoy being able to talk a little bit more about it.
Please promote something though. Is there something you want to give a shout out to, or your website?
You gave
again?
Me plenty of time. No, yeah. You gave me plenty of time. People That's know cool. what I'm doing now if they listen and they made it far enough in. So gemrate.com, check out Universal Search, you know, save it to your home screen, use it at a show or, you know, trade night, but, and feel free to, I love feedback. So, you know, try to send me any improvements that you think could be made too.
How can we contact you, Ryan?
Instagram's easy. A lot of people like to shoot me messages at gemrate on Instagram. Ryan@gemrate.com is also super easy.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We really appreciate it. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. Thanks a lot. Goodbye.